with episode 582 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and yes, I know they say these things always go in threes, but man, that was a rough three this week.
Yeah, I don't even know where to go from there. It's going to be a little bit of another eulogistic beginning of the week for us here, The Critical Myth, but it's just Edmund and I for right now, so hopefully we can at least start off with, you know, what's going on with our co-hosts. Well, one is unfortunately working. The other one is exploring the southernmost tips of their state in camping.
In fact, of the United States, I believe.
Yes, I believe you are right. And so, therefore, a little bit remote and unable to get onto the recording tonight. But, yeah, it's a little bit of a crazy weekend as well because, yeah, I was just a couple hours ago over at Anime Next, which is a local anime convention that few hosts here on the VOG network actually wind up going there. I ran into DJ Ranma S. from Anime Jam Session this afternoon, and I know that one of his co-hosts, Ari Rockefeller, is there as well. I didn't quite get to run into him today, but hopefully tomorrow or Sunday. And boy, it was blisteringly hot. It was like Dragon Con hot.
Oh boy.
And unlike Dragon Con, where it was easy to get in and out of the heat, yeah, I was stuck in a pre-registration line, all outside, by the way, for about 90 to 120 minutes, somewhere in that range.
Unfortunately, it sounds like they need to talk to Dragon Con, since they used to have those problems, but now the line moves lightning quick.
Yes. Well, this is the last year that they're going to be here. They're outgrowing their space, and that's part of the problem.
Okay, sure.
But at any rate, they warn you at Dragon Con to, you know, keep a good eye on your hydration levels and everything else. Yep. And warn you about what the possible effects of dehydration might be. And they kind of warned everybody a couple days ago that based on the temperature that, yeah, you know, be careful out there at the con and all of that. But it's definitely a very different thing when you can actually physically feel those effects of dehydration slowly ticking down the list. As you're standing in line, you go, huh? Yep. Pulse is speeding up.
Yeah.
Yep. Headache. Yep. It's like, oh, this is great. Well, this can only end well.
Yeah. Redness in the face. It's like, yeah. Okay.
Well,
hopefully I'll get to the counter before I actually reach the passing out phase.
Yes, exactly. Which thankfully I did, but I don't think I've drunk quite that much Gatorade and water in a 10-minute period ever. Ouch. Yes. So that was boy, it'll be a lot of fun going back today or tomorrow rather. But yeah, it's definitely a hot one right now. And so I'm sure that Gary on his camping trip is having quite a lot of fun, especially if they're in a tent somewhere. Well, it's on, you know, one of the Florida Keys. I'm sure he's doing just fine.
I think he'll manage.
Bastard. Anyway, well, we have to manage a few unfortunate news items here at the very top of our list. No real need for a disclaimer here. Obviously, there's a few news items, but it's all prospective stuff as we're used to at this point for news. But unfortunately, we are starting off with, as Edmund alluded, the passing on of some legends this week. It's getting to be an all too familiar feeling.
Yes, unfortunately.
2015, we're having words. Anyway.
Language.
yeah. Well, let's see. The first one, I guess. How do you put these in an order? I guess you just start with the one that everybody is probably thinking of the most right now, and that would be Christopher Lee, passing at the age of 93, I believe.
I believe so, yes.
Yes, and working pretty much right up until the end. I mean, there were a lot of people that were shocked by this, not simply because, you know, he passed, but he's been still prolific in his old age. I think it was just the shock that he actually stopped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. And certainly, I mean, extraordinary length to his career and the way he managed to span so many different eras and genres. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, starting out with the Hammer horror films and Dracula and sort of being known for that, and then of course more recently, you know, taking on the Lord of the Rings and even getting to fight Yoda in Star Wars. So, you know, it's an amazing span of work that he had. And I know it was a story that I'd heard before, but with his death, I was glad that a lot of people were talking about Peter Jackson coming up to him at one point in the filming of one of the Lord of the Rings, and describing to him that it's the sound someone makes when you sneak up behind them and stab them in the back. Christopher Lee basically let it be known that, you know, well, no, what you're doing there isn't quite right, because I actually know what it sounds like.
Yes, you don't need to describe it to me. I know.
Yes.
And then everyone backed away. Yes. I mean, that's when I first heard that story, I was kind of amazed by it, and it really added to his, you know, mystique, to say the least.
Yes. And just to be clear, it should be said, it's because he was in the Special Forces in World War II. So.
Okay. Good point that you.
He wasn't just that much of a method actor where he was practicing behind the scenes.
No, that would make The Wicker Man a lot more interesting. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, to speak of movies like that, I mean, there was a time when it seemed like every afternoon on the weekends when you were going on the UHF dial, for those of you out there who remember,
yes.
There was a movie with either Vincent Price or Christopher Lee somewhere,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you got used to that voice, and that's one of the things that I loved about him being cast in some of these genre roles late in his career, was just the fact that you had somebody with that gravitas, and boy, talk about a voice with gravitas. One of the things I love about his last decade or more was how he was regularly putting out these like thrash death metal albums.
Yes.
And especially the Christmas songs, which were the best ones, I think. But I think I alluded to it on Facebook, where after reading the news, I then queued up on YouTube his rendition of My Way, the metal version, of course. And it's wonderfully hilarious and yet just dripping with awesome. So anyone who, you know, really is kind of shocked to hear that this was something that he did. No, really, he did. You should go and look it up. Even if it's not your style of music, but you can't the flair.
Yeah, you do need to experience it. He was not, oh, yes. He was not just a fan.
Oh, no. No, I think he had an entire concept album around the life of Charlemagne or something to that effect, if I recall, but...
That sounds familiar, yes.
Yeah. So, yes, he was definitely prolific. He definitely leaves a huge gap. I mean, again, this is just another one of these huge figures from our youth onward that is now not going to be there, and had a profound effect on the genre in recent years. That's just going to be another one of these luminaries that we've lost.
Yeah.
But it's only one of three. Edmund, if you want to expound. Painfully.
Well, I realized in terms of the ones I was thinking of. I mean, the next one that was the biggie for me was Ornette Coleman, but that's just because he was an amazing jazz innovator. He did live to, I believe, it was about 85. So it was was a good long life. He wasn't one of these jazz guys who didn't take care of themselves and fell early. But it's still sad to see him go. And just another one of that generation that we don't get to hear anymore, because he's still been playing and knocking it out of the park.
Mm. Yeah, I think that for some, it's kind of a completely different type of genre, but certainly within hours of that, there was the news that Dusty Rhodes, I believe his name was, died as well, which for those who are huge, you know, wrestling fans, that was, yes, certainly a blow, to say the least. I mean, again, this is, you know, maybe far less of a, what's the word that I would use for that, I guess, you know, luminous type of genre, but at the same time, there is a bit of a history there.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly from an entertainment point of view, if nothing else. And we've seen a few people along those lines pass in the last few years. But then, yeah, I know that you had also mentioned someone else that passed, and this one was kind of odd to me because I needed to be reminded exactly who it was. And as soon as I read it, it was like, ah, of course that's who it was. And now I can't find the link. Well, that's not helpful. But I believe it was the actor who played Fagin.
Yes. Yeah. No. Ron Moody.
Thank you.
not that well known on this side of the pond, but a huge figure in British film and TV. But yeah, his most famous role was playing Fagin in Oliver, that musical version of Oliver Twist that came out in the late '60s.
Yes, the one that most of us did, in fact, see even over here on this side of the pond.
Yes. So. Yeah, no, I think it did win the Oscar or something like that. But
It does take a bit push to get it out to the public over here sometimes. But that one, again, would have been the kind of film that would have probably been on regularly, especially in the early days of cable.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's just a very tough week. I know that certainly there, like I said, you could pick your threesome of celebrity deaths as you wish, but there was certainly unfortunately no lack of choices this time around.
Yeah.
But we can probably move on from the kind of, apparently not. Something else was declared dead this week, unfortunately, and it's probably of no surprise. This one had been, unfortunately, on life support for a while, and they finally pulled the plug. And this would be the show Constantine. NBC canceled it, and I guess there was still some rumblings that maybe the CW might try to pick it up. I know Warner Brothers was trying to get it picked up somewhere. But the executive producer, Daniel Cerone, basically came forward this past week and said, nope, despite all of the support from the fans, unfortunately, the cast and the writers are being released from the contracts, and there really is no new home for the show. So, unfortunately, it's the case of a show that had needed a few weeks in order to get its footing, and other than its devoted fandom, there weren't a whole lot of people that were willing to do that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, because it certainly did seem like a perfect fit with Grimm on that Friday night. So, you know, I wish they had been given a chance to retool it, but of course that's not even retool. I mean, they had ironed out a lot of it by the end of the season, but just to keep keep going. But of course, it's rare that you actually get that shot nowadays.
Mm. Yeah. It even would have been a pretty good match for putting on the CW against or next to something like Supernatural.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
If nothing else, it might have inspired Supernatural to really pick its game back up.
Yes.
Let's all be clear. Constantine did much better in its one season of 13 episodes than Supernatural has done in the last few.
Quite a while. Yeah.
Seasons. So, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually, just on that topic of shows getting more of a chance, I've actually been pleasantly surprised with AMC, the fact that both Turn and Halt and Catch Fire they did bring back for second seasons, we already know about Turn, but Halt and Catch Fire as well. They completely retooled it and made it a much better show.
Yeah, I can't say that we cover Halt and Catch Fire for reasons that I can't even begin to comprehend, but. I know that it was on my short list of shows that I was considering picking up for the summer until I then saw just how much stuff was coming in June.
Yes.
It's kind of why for those who might wonder, why did you not talk about Penny Dreadful? There was no time to pick it up.
Yeah, well, no, I have been watching it, and will just say that yes, it is a heck of a lot of fun. I mean, you know, we talk in terms of what we cover here. We talk about Salem being our guilty pleasure. I mean, Penny Dreadful is like, you know, is guilty pleasure times, you know, a couple of points of magnitude, basically.
Salem on steroids.
Yes,
but I did watch the first episode of the show, and then I completely ran out of time. But that's it's a similar thing, and yeah, we do try to pick up shows that even if only one of us is watching it, to kind of put onto the list. But not everything manages to get there, but it's just the way that it works out sometimes. In fact, you know, sometimes we just look at it and say we have enough on the list.
Yeah.
But anyway, Edmund, if you don't mind taking the next item here as we move on to cable news.
Yes, and this is for the Sci-Fi Channel, who apparently have just decided to keep raiding my bookshelves for their new ideas. They have announced that they are teaming with Bradley Cooper, Graham King, who produced The Departed and Argo, and Todd Phillips, who produced The Hangover and Old School. Okay, interesting mix. To develop Dan Simmons' Hyperion as an event series. And seeing if they have actual writing credits yet. It looks like No, I think all that is still to be announced. But certainly, of course, this continues on with the other series they are starting to roll out, also based on books like The Expanse and, of course, Childhood's End, which Charles Dance has been convincing us to see in amazing fashion. we will, again, keep our fingers crossed that a fabulous book gets a decent adaptation.
Yeah, I certainly hope so as well. This is one of the ones that I remember enjoying quite a bit, and it is the type of story that, if done right, kind of lends itself to an event series type of thing, because it's, at least the first book, is fairly episodic, as I recall. It's kind of a science fiction take on the Canterbury Tales type of formatting, and that would be an interesting kind of novel to try to adapt and format for the television medium. Yeah. I'm very curious to see how this goes.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, and certainly a big sweeping canvas for them to lay out. So it is nice to see that sort of more space opera-y stuff start to come back.
Oh, definitely. I mean, come on, the Shrike on TV. That could be interesting. Now, talk about interesting. Oh, George. Yes. George R. R. Martin says he has 3 TV shows in development.
He's just a glutton.
How about a book?
Glutton for punishment, isn't he? Yes.
Yes, he is. Well, he has confirmed he is busy working on a lot of different things all at the same time, which, some people, that's the way they work best. Let's be fair.
One of those is the book, so...
Yes, one of them is The Winds of Winter, which the Game of Thrones is doing a nice job of starting to adapt for him already. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, he also has 3 short, low-budget films, he says, he hopes to produce, and then 3 new series concepts for HBO and Cinemax. He doesn't say a whole lot about those, but one of them may be this rumored Captain Cosmos project. But who knows?
Yeah, and I'm trying to think. There was the Wild Card series is the other one that he actually largely edited that and basically got all of his best friends to write short stories for them. But
I have to. Wild Card started back when I was in high school.
Yeah,
it's still going. Mm-hmm. Gee, that's familiar. George R. R. Martin, don't ever change. No, seriously, change. Just get the damn books out already. Serious, if nothing else, so that people will stop getting angry at the writers for Game of Thrones for doing things that are in the next book, and they just say, that'll never happen. Well, yeah. Anyway. Okay. I bring this up because he's also getting a little bit tired of people bothering him, so to speak, about complaints about the show, Game of Thrones.
Right.
This is what he says, in fact. Meanwhile, other wars are breaking out on other fronts, centered around the last few episodes of Game of Thrones. It is not my intention to get involved in those, nor to allow them to take over my blog and website, so please stop emailing me about them or posting off-topic comments here on my not-a-blog. I cannot control what anyone else says or does or make them stop saying or doing it, be it on the fanish or professional fronts. What I can't control is what happens in my books, so I'm going to return to that chapter I've been writing on The Winds of Winter now. Thank you very much. Okay, then.
Yeah.
Well, what's really interesting here is that he does seem, and people, despite the fact that some people have taken it out of context, of course, to be slightly annoyed that when stuff happens on the show that is controversial, that, you know, Weiss and Benioff will kind of allude to the fact that, oh, no, this is some of that stuff that we talked about with George R. R. Martin about future things that we need to incorporate.
Yep.
I've actually read the words, this may have been paraphrasing, but spoiling his books. Really, George?
There's an easy way to get around that.
There is.
Well, there was, I should say, at this point.
Now it makes a lot of sense why he's suddenly realizing that he really should get book 6 out before next season of the show.
Yes.
If only he had recognize this sense of urgency much earlier so that, you know, the whole problem could have been resolved. Because guess what, George? I hate to tell you, even if you get the next book out before season 6, chances of you getting the last book out before season 7, pretty slim. And I know that part of it is that he, like HBO, was kind of hoping that this would be more of a 10-season show versus 7, but these things happen. If you wanted more control over it. Anyway.
Yes.
We've kind of beaten that dead horse. Oh, wait. dead horse. Must have been George R. R. Martin involved. Anyway.
Yeah.
oh, boy. All right. So moving on then from Cable onto movie news, we have some interesting, well, small world news, I guess you could call this. Do you want to take the first one?
Absolutely. As I believe we had reported, of course, the Stephen S. DeKnight, who had stepped in as showrunner for Daredevil's first season and then since had moved on, and apparently one of the places he's moved on to is the writing room for Transformers. This was already lined up while he was on Daredevil. So, when he was leaving, he did say it was due to a previous commitment in the feature world, and that's what this is. And except no, then he's saying Transformers wasn't that. Okay, well, so he's got more than one iron in the fire. That rather crowded writer's room for Transformers just got another big gun to walk in, since at this point, they have just about every comic franchise represented, a couple of major TV shows, it should be some interesting scraps for us to hear rumors about.
I know that there's, I almost wish that Brad Stone was here just to get his extreme reaction to this one. But that all said, I feel like, I have to kind of point out that these names that are being attached to this whole Transformers reboot, re-envisioning, whatever you want to call it, there's some pretty big names and reliable names. And now I'm sitting back and thinking either they're going to get like subsumed into this nightmare, or they might actually have a chance of doing something with this. Could you imagine Transformers done in the style of Spartacus, by the way? That would be brilliant.
Yes, it would.
Especially if it was all the human characters in the first 5 minutes of the film, just getting completely wiped out. Anyway, moving on then from the former Daredevil showrunner and his plans, we then have some news about the season 2 Daredevil showrunner and future plans.
Okay.
So the second season is being run, Daredevil's second season, excuse me, is being run by Marco J. Ramirez, who is now going to be tackling the script writing duties for the ever gestating live action Akira remake.
Oh, yes.
Let's hope that this does not involve Keanu Reeves this time. I got nothing against Keanu, but some roles just aren't going to work, buddy.
No.
So he has written for – Ramirez has written for – of course, he's going to be working on Daredevil, but he's also been on Sons of Anarchy, Orange is the New Black, Da Vinci's Demons, and he's now going to be tackling Akira. I guess that's not a bad pedigree for this type of story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, there's definitely some a blend of action and humor and tragedy and all of those, and the ability to go from, 0 to 100 in terms of the intensity pretty fast. So, yeah.
Yeah. This is a project I've been kind of lukewarm on, or one of those cases of do we really need to do this? Especially I'm not, it looks like with the timing, it's like, we'll probably get a chance to see season two, before that. Of course, at this point, this adaptation has been, as they say, long gestating so long. It's like, I'm sure if it does actually happen, it'll be after season two. So we'll be able to get a chance to see some of his work and keep our fingers crossed. Cause this looks like it could be helpful.
Yeah, it could. I mean, I don't really know that there is a need for a live-action version of Akira, but okay. It's still kind of one of those early, adaptations from manga to film-length animation that just looms in the memory. Because, that was back when I was really just kind of rediscovering, how it goes. There's a cycle, there was the stuff that I watched when I was very young and then it kind of went away for a while out of the popularity in the US. And then Akira was really one of those things that really put it back onto the spectrum.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Nice loud one this time. It's to make up for the relative dearth of casting news we have. But yeah, we have some rather unusual casting news this time.
Yes. Yes. No, I had to go big because, you know, he is a big star. So, and if he'd tried that with the hammer, it would have been even louder. But no, this is Ghostbusters casting news, where, of course, this is the all-female ghostbusting crew. So, of course, they have also reversed the gender for their receptionist, originally played by Annie Potts, will be played by Chris Hemsworth.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. And probably means that I'm going to have to watch the movie now. I think the wife will insist.
Yes, I kind of figured that.
Yes, pretty boy back on the screen. Here we go again. Yes, and that's the first of our casting nuggets here. And the other one here, oh boy, I can never say this guy's name. Chiwetel Ejiofor?
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, forget it. I made the same mistakes back when he was in Serenity, and I still to this day cannot get it right. The guy who played the operative in Serenity is going to play Baron Mordo in Doctor Strange. Baron Mordo, of course, being one of Doctor Strange's archenemies in the classic tales, going back to the very early days of Doctor Strange, as I recall. I'm trying to remember exactly which book he shared back in the mid-60s, but Mordo was one of his first... he was actually, I believe, his very first enemy, wasn't he? Let's see. It may say here. It doesn't. But basically, it just refers to the fact that he has plagued the Sorcerer Supreme throughout the years. However, these same reports also say that Mordo may not be an outright villain in the Benedict Cumberbatch starring film. Rather, this will be reportedly a blend of several other characters from the Doctor Strange history. That makes things a little more interesting, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Because Mordo was a little bit arch.
Yes.
What's even more interesting here is that this, of course, makes the casting a lot more diverse, which is hopeful, especially when we heard those rumors that Tilda Swinton may be playing a completely different version of the Ancient One from what we are used to seeing. I kind of like where they're going with this. Anything that kind of changes things up and breaks expectations is probably a good thing going to phase three.
Yeah, and certainly if any of the films coming up, Doctor Strange is the one that you can certainly play with a little bit more than some of the other more iconic characters.
That is very true. There's not a lot of people that probably have expectations for this other than the purists.
Yes.
And so going for a kind of general audience reaction, yeah, I'm sure that they could do a lot to draw in some folks into the MCU that maybe feel like they're underrepresented. Let's put it that way. You know what would be a great way to take care of that problem? Make a Black Widow movie.
Hmm.
It's a thought. I'm throwing it out there.
Yeah, well, I think their problem is they can't figure out what to do with the merchandising, since, of course, if it's her movie, but she can't actually appear on any of the stuff that they
do. Oh, you know, yeah. So. I see. Yeah. Although that is a late-breaking piece of news, is that Marvel is saying basically that with the next year's upcoming Captain America Civil War, that they are going to be putting a great deal of additional attention on Black Widow merchandise. What was interesting about that, of course, was that it's not simply that they're going to put some out, but that they're also thinking of putting out, you know, action figures and, you know, costumes, and they specifically put it for adult women.
Ah.
I guess they know who's been complaining.
Yes.
I mean, there's costumes out there, believe me, I know, but that it's certainly not nearly as ubiquitous as what you see for the male characters. That's it takes a bit of digging.
Absolutely.
As our friend Ken could tell us all about. Anyway, we are going to then bring this news or this news rundown. Sorry. Again, people, I was in the sun a lot today. We're going to bring this to a close. We're going to have a quick little break. When we come back, we're going to start on what will be a somewhat extended rundown of some more of these shows that we covered in the last 12 months. So stay tuned. All right. And as I kind of alluded to here, we are going to be getting into more of our retrospective of the last year or so, what we would count in our parlance as the 2014 to 2015 season, June to June, roughly. And yeah, kind of coincides with the longest lull in the programming schedule, but increasingly there's less and less of a lull. So in some of these cases, we are projecting a bit of a result at this point because there's still a stray episode or two out there for a couple of these. But the math all works out in the end, trust me. We are then going to be talking about, over the rest of this episode and probably next one as well, shows 40 through 21. So basically half of what is left on our list here. So if we start in our number 40 slot, we have a show that came in at an average of 7.63, which is pretty good for any show's first season, but especially a show where they let the lead character live. And this one is Legends. Yes, Sean Bean lasted more than one episode of a show.
More than one season, even though they were certainly doing their darndest at the end there. But just to play with us a little bit.
Yes. Now, does it count if he plays a different, like, you know, undercover role that only lasts an episode or two?
Yes.
Is that kind of equivalent to just killing him off? We'll call that a yes.
Yeah. So in other words, no, we didn't have to see him die once. We just saw him die about half a dozen times throughout the first season.
Right, metaphorically. Yes. Yeah, well, this was a good show, to say the least, coming in at a 7.63, like I said, for the first season. That's just definitely getting up into the above average range. And yeah, what's probably notable here is that It took a concept that TNT just kind of put out there and didn't really explain very well and fleshed it out very nicely over the space of its episodes and got enough ratings to get renewed for a second season.
Yep. And it'll be interesting to see, since they did the way they shook things up at the end of the first season. It's one of those cases where they're basically coming back with what may feel like an entirely different show. So I'll be interested to see if they can keep it up.
Yes, the first season felt very introductory, so I have hopes that they have a plan of where they're going with all of this, at least a vague idea.
Yeah.
Now, coming in at 7.65 in our number 39 slot here was Grimm Season 4, which quite some time ago, as we were covering the season finale, I mentioned that this show is notable for not only bringing itself out of a late season tailspin, but doing so in such a fashion that it actually wound up having exactly the same final result as its third season previously. I don't think we've ever had a show that landed directly on the exact same score after 22 episodes. It's kind of hard to do that. But Grimm did it, and that means that as far as this season is concerned, despite its low points, it wound up maintaining the level of quality that we have seen for two seasons in a row now. And what I take away from that is if they can kind of avoid those same problems in season five, the show could really keep growing and keep getting better, which is something that a lot of shows don't do. So Grimm has really kind of come leaps and bounds from that first season where it took really long time to find its own sense of identity.
Oh, good. That's all I need. Another couple of seasons to put on the to watch list.
Gary and I will just keep explaining what's going on.
I do tend to always listen in when you guys are talking about it. I figure since I'm the one who deals out the spoiler warnings, it's like, you know, I shouldn't complain if I get a little spoiled myself. So.
Well, talking about being spoiled, we keep getting spoiled by the writing sometimes on this next show, and this one would be Homeland. This time in the number 38 slot, coming in at an average of 7.66. Now, this I do have to say that this fourth season did manage to jump way up from the third season, which was a huge disappointment, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Just remember the brilliant plan to have Carrie fake going nuts again, which was absolutely going to drag the guy in.
Oh, yeah, definitely. What I remember about this last season is that it did have some rough patches in the first half, and then the second half was just a completely different animal.
Yeah.
Really just knocking it out of the park. But the low points seem to be whenever they brought Carrie back to the U.S. to deal with her family drama.
Yeah, exactly.
The show came to a grinding halt.
Yeah, and that was also then part of the problem because yes, I mean, when they were just concentrating on basically just being a Middle East spy show and having attacks and counterattacks and it was doing really really well, and but then it just ended with a thud precisely because everything was over and they were back in Washington and it was like this completely weird anticlimactic finale, and now of course they're completely retooling it supposedly for the next season. So it was like, oh good, guys, you kind of found your footing in, now you're just going off in a completely different direction. Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the problem. The last couple seasons have been kind of whipsawing left and right, trying to find itself after two seasons of being relatively tightly written, and really, one could make the argument that they need to go past season two. Just because they kind of managed to find a pretty good story in the fourth season, at least for, more than half the episodes, and certainly the second half of the season, it doesn't mean that they have fixed the problem,
yeah,
which has been a kind of a creative, void. And unfortunately, this is looking a lot like the back and forth that we saw in the latter days of 24 when Howard Gordon started to lose sight of what to do with the show.
Yeah, and as you're going over that timeline, I mean, it also occurs to me. I mean, there was that major loss on the writing and production end when Henry Brumell died just before the second season started, and I think his influence, I mean, coming from Homicide and Rubicon, I think it was part of what kept it tighter in that first season and a half or so, because it was really in that latter part of season two that it started to just fall apart and go whichever way they felt. that particular week.
Yeah, that sums it up pretty well. Thankfully, we can say a lot better things about this next show, and we already have. And coming in at number 37 is Constantine in its one and unfortunately only season, getting an average of 7.69. Yeah, I mean, we've already kind of said what we were going to say about it, right? I mean, it was a show that started off a little rough and then quickly found its footing and just seemed to really get more and more comfortable over time. And it really built to something that could have brought us a second season that would almost completely change some major underpinnings of the show itself.
Yeah, no, certainly I would say the most unfortunate cancellation of this season certainly in terms of a show that was showing a lot of promise, and I wish we could get to see what they were going to do.
Yeah, unfortunately, it looks like we're not going to get that opportunity. What can you do? Let's see here. We are going to then move on to the next show on the list, which is one that this was just an oddity, I think, and I really am curious to see if they're going to bring it back. But at number 36, the first season of The Returned,
yes,
which we have no information about a potential return for. Go figure.
I was just going to say that. No, the problem is they don't know what they're going to do yet because the French one hasn't aired its second season yet.
Fair enough. And that's kind of the rub is that, yeah, if they wind up not getting picked up for a second season, then the viewers of The American Returned could just as easily pick up watching the second season of Le Revenant. Mm-hmm. And probably pick up without really any difficulty whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because they were basically the same story, practically down to the fine details.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine. I think I mentioned this many times. What I like about that is that the accessibility for most people to the original French version was relatively small.
Yeah.
You'd have to really know where to look, when to look. I think it ran once on IFC or something like that.
Sundance, actually.
Sundance, right. So, yeah, see, even I didn't know exactly where it was. But then, this is where you get these adaptations, and I feel like this is one of those circumstances where it actually makes sense, where the accessibility of the original source material is relatively low, and there is a value in redoing it for an American audience, where, similar examples, like something like Broadchurch,
Yes.
Being remade into Grace Point makes no sense whatsoever because literally everyone who tuned into Grace Point already watched Broadchurch and just unmercifully just ripped it to shreds over the fact that any little change between the two, there really was no reason for that.
Yes.
This was one of those kind of rare examples of something that made sense. And the fact that they were so respectful of the original material probably helps. They've got a great cast. They kept the relative pacing of the show. They kept to the plot points. The fact that all I needed to do was do the recap and Edmund would be like, yep, that's exactly where the original went.
Yes.
Kind of gives you the story. So really you have two different kind of versions of the same story, depending on what your preference might be, to either go back and try to find the original, or you can watch this version. Both of them are quite good.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, go from there. And I at least hope that it comes back for a second season because, again, I like the cast. I think the cast did a bang-up job, and that's the version of the story I saw.
Yeah.
So it would be easy for me to pick that up. But anyway.
Yeah, and certainly, the producers of the American version, made it very clear that, they were doing this out of great respect for the French version, and wanting it to just get that bigger audience. And it sounds like it certainly succeeded. And, I would like to see them continue this experiment going forward.
Yes, and that brings us to our number 35 show, which will probably be the last one we cover in this particular episode of ours. And this one is Doctor Who, coming in at a 7.76.
Wow.
A slight uptick over the previous season. And yeah, I was a little surprised by that too, because when many people go back and think of this latest series 8 of Doctor Who, it doesn't particularly... It doesn't bring to mind great things.
Yeah, things were a little awkward in transition. Yes.
Yes, that's exactly. It's hard to pin down because I think it's because the flaws are easy to recall. But that all said, when you look back at the general thrust of it, it was just a very inconsistent season.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it wasn't nearly as inconsistent as some of the things that we saw out of, say, the previous season with Matt Smith's last year. And I think what helps here is that the dynamic between the Doctor, the 12th Doctor, and Clara was a lot more varied than what we had seen previously.
Yeah, of course. Part of me does wonder, since it's now been confirmed that there was the whole issue of they went into the season assuming that Jenna Coleman was going to be leaving, and then she decides as they get towards the end that no, she wants to stay on, because there was obvious foreshadowing going on, for a companion change sort of upcoming, and then it was a little odd, certainly, in the end to have her come back. I mean, not that I was objecting, because I did like the dynamic they've been working up to together, and I think it makes sense for the show to continue exploring that.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping that they continue to stray away from the expectations a little bit. At the same time, I feel like the stories last season didn't quite lend themselves as well to Peter Capaldi as they could have. And since the last season was kind of all about him finding himself, especially at the very beginning, now that that's over, they really need to kind of get past that anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think we're going to go ahead and end here, and next time we'll pick up with the rest of our rundown for this particular week. And yeah, we have some surprises on the list between now and number 21. So until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.